Giddy up. Rise and shine.
Well, I'm riding.
You've got Rosie on the house.
Singing the same old cowboy.
We count it a great privilege that you've tuned in to catch our broadcast this morning. In Arizona tradition for 29 years, we are every Arizona homeowner's happy place. Consider us your weekend wake-up call.
And I'm the only man I know.
Here it comes.
You singing today?
I'm happy and I'm free.
I love that song. That puts you in the mood for a road trip right there, doesn't it, folks? We've got the entire staff here this morning at Rosie on the House. My co-host, Romy Romero, is in studio this morning. He spent a lot of time in the last few weeks and months on the road and doing some remote broadcasts. It's kind of good to be back in the studio. My wife, sweet Jennifer, is here. So thanks again for joining us. And we've got Gary D., the broadcast engineer, making sure all the buttons are pushed and the dials are set so we can reach your home, your car, wherever it is you opt to listen to us. The 7 o'clock hour is the crazy hour because we just kind of take over the microphones and we talk about whatever the Romeros want to talk about. Doesn't have much to do, generally speaking, with home improvement. Has mostly a lot to do with people and places of the great state of Arizona. So we've invited a repeat guest in this morning, probably one of our most popular guests. We get tons of feedback every time he's on air. We've talked about the history of the Constitution. We've talked about the history of the Declaration of Independence. We've talked about the history of Labor Day, history of Memorial Day, the 4th of July celebration. It's the one, the only assistant professor of history from Grand Canyon University, Mr. David Dean.
Good morning, Rosie. How you
doing? Dr. David Dean. All of that, and I miss the doctor.
It's okay. Okay. I try to get my wife to call me doctor all the time, but she won't do that. No, you're still
David.
David, get this done.
No,
still got
man.
A honey-do list, huh?
That's right.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we generally like to get Dr. Dean in around holidays and stuff, and he brings us a history of that particular event in the context of national history and as it can funnel down in specific and in particular into the great state of Arizona. So we invited him for this weekend holiday broadcast.
And he came with kind of a little different twist, fun twist.
Yeah. He nailed it.
He did.
This is perfect. What I did on my summer vacation.
Everybody goes back to school and their teachers always ask them that. And you had to write a little essay. What did I do on my summer vacation? So today I thought I would think about, as the Labor Day weekend usually marks the last travel weekend of the summer. Most people get ready for the fall, start turning their attention to all that busy time. And it's time to reflect about traveling and how we do that. And so historically, I wanted to look at automobile touring in America, particularly kind of the two golden ages of that, the 20s, 30s, and again, the 50s through the 70s. And so I thought it'd be a good time to talk about automobile touring in America, and particularly here in Arizona.
Did that become a passion of yours before or after the Corvair?
Oh, we went on those family vacations and stuff growing up. We would drive from Phoenix back to visit relatives in Kentucky and Georgia. And so it was every summer big road trips back and forth. So I love the automobile touring. If I never had to get on another plane again, that would be fine with me.
Yeah, that's the way I feel. If you can't get there to F-250, there isn't a whole lot of reason to go. But the road system in America.
Yes.
Let's start there.
Okay.
I mean, they begin as animal trails. They become Native American foot trails. They turn into wagon trails. Some turn into railroad lines. And some turn into roads.
And some turn into roads. And that's because usually if you're walking it, it's probably the easiest place to eventually drive. And so a lot of our roads have those kind of same kind of pathways. They just become more improved over time, wider, paved and whatnot. And they follow. So they are an easier course. You're not going over the top of the mountain. Let's find the route between the mountains, that kind of thing. So,
and we've got all these dirt rutted roads susceptible to weather deterioration and abuse. And we start improving these roads with all weather surfaces, not for the car.
Right. For bicycles.
For bicycles.
The Good Roads movement that came about in the turn of the century, because bicycles were really popular between the 1890s and the 1910s. Automobiles aren't really outside of cities too much. They're still improving the technology. A steam car, for the most part, isn't going to be able to go on a long haul because you either have to take too much water or you have to stop too frequently, like a train would have to do, but it's a little car. And so until the technologies really kind of catch up to touring, most people are going from city to city, or say touring from Chicago or the Midwest or back east out to the west and back via railroads. But when automobiles start to get a little bit more advanced, rubber tires to help absorb some of that, electric starters, gasoline more readily available, the technologies improve that people start to use the cars. The Good Roads movement was bicyclist enthusiasts that wanted those roads nicer for their bicycles. But bicycles go from the big wheel, small wheel, to two even wheels, and then they will later make their transition into motorcycles, which will also kind of encourage touring.
Were those bicycle roads paved?
In the city, they start trying to pave them in the cities, and then as they get out from the cities to go on little day tours and that kind of stuff. But how far can you really ride on a bicycle? You're not riding Phoenix to Los Angeles on a bicycle in 1920. Not, I don't think so. Somebody might have done it. But it's the automobile that takes over, because automobile touring really becomes something that the masses start doing by the 1920s.
Well, Henry Ford rolls out the Model T, what, about 1915?
Not about 1915.
$350.
$350.
$350.
Everybody could own
one. You
can't
even buy a bicycle for $350 right now.
Yeah, you could pay a lot. I have my grandpa's first title to, great-grandpa title to his first Model T Ford.
Oh. How did the Model T get its name? You're a car fan.
I know it was nicknamed the Tin Lizzie because it was kind of a metal horseless carriage kind of thing, but I'm not sure, because later on when he improved it, it went from the Model T to the Model A. You would think that would be the other way around.
Right, okay.
But I think he just started the Model T. He probably had other drawing board designs, and that's the one he settled on, I guess.
Well, if I've observed anything, is people love to participate. And I'm sure there's somebody out there that knows the complete history of the actual T. You can text that to 411-923, and I can tell you we'll have an update here before the next commercial break.
I'm not a Ford person. I'm a Chevy guy.
Right.
So,
well, we'll change that before you leave.
But by 1917, you know, 730,000 cars are rolling off the assembly line. And again, for $350 a piece, the wealthy were the first that kind of looked at automobiles as kind of a novelty and stuff. But when they became so mass-produced and everybody had one, the wealthy kind of get out of the tourism thing and move to aviation, because that was exotic and certainly much more expensive. And
back when you had to get dressed up to fly.
Right. And
they fed you food.
Or you just had to spend a lot of money to own an airplane.
Oh.
You know, we're talking the early days.
Okay, yes.
And so automobiles, people start going from just the utilitarian, you're using them in town, to, hey, let's take a road trip. And let's go from Minnesota all the way out to the west. Let's see what's happening. Just like they would have done on a railroad, but now they're doing it on their cars.
And they're doing that on state highways.
State highways. One after another.
State highways.
And without air conditioning, I'm assuming.
Oh, that's right.
Without air conditioning, it was an adventure. It was a way of seeing the mountains, going through the valleys, hitting weather. All those different kind of things came to them. One group got kind of stranded for several days because of the storms and things. And they were rescued by a group of people that were looking for a rancher that had gotten lost. Turns out they found the poor rancher's body a mile from their camp, you know, several days later. It's just the adventure of hitting the west and you're doing it in this car kind of a thing, as opposed to having to take a train out to the west.
Well, and then the early versions of the motorhome, the camper trailer, the Sanderson Ford Auto Museum has a station wagon that has to be from the 40s or 50s. And it's kind of a wood paneled, and it's kind of a soft yellow green color to it, but it has a complete matching tow behind unit. That's really not a sleeping unit, but it's kind of a fold-out kitchen unit. The doors drop, and you've got your kitchen, your sink, and your little cooktop in there. And
it's the tow-behind chuck wagon.
The tow-behind chuck wagon, absolutely. Well, we're here with Dr. David Dean, assistant professor at Grand Canyon University, talking about the history of roads and byways and highways and the whole concept of what did you do this summer on vacation. I can remember coming back to school many, many times, and it was the show and tell. The first show and tell of the year was you had to report on your summer vacation, and it wasn't until I was in high school that that wasn't about some family road trip we had taken that summer. In our family, raising the kids, we'd get back to Louisiana. You were mentioning y'all would go back to Kentucky a lot. My kids would always say, you know, if it weren't for Texas, Louisiana would be a lot closer.
Yes, you can drive in Texas for several days. My dad would always try to make it from Phoenix to Abilene, Big Springs or something, and then the next day try to get to Texarkana. He's like, 2 days in Texas is enough for me.
Now, what were y'all doing that trip in?
Well, usually it was to go back and visit families.
But what vehicle?
Oh, what we did. 1 year, we did it in a 76 Chrysler Cordoba. That was a very exotic car.
Yes, yes.
Yellow. Yes. With the Landau top. We did it in a Buick, a 71 Buick LeSabre once. Just whatever car kind of happened we had. I think we did it in a little camper truck. My parents, we did it in a van 1 year.
There you go.
A Chevy van, by the way.
Oh, great memories. Well, the Romeros were traveling in the 70s. No, that would be the 60s when we moved from Louisiana to Phoenix. And we were in a Ford Econoline van with a center engine mount between the driver and the passenger seat. And all the kids fought for that seat. Had no seat belt. It was hot. You couldn't sit there very long, but we all wanted that seat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you all had your favorite seat on your own family road trips. When we get back, we'll be talking more with Dr. David Dean about motor touring the 20s, old Highway 80 from El Paso to San Diego.